This is Section 14, selling to non-mass market retailers and how to set up national distribution using reps.
Can you explain some of the different types of sales reps for different distribution channels?
Pretty much each distribution channel has its own reps. For example, if you were selling grocery stores, in a grocery store you have the food section and the non-food section, and they have different reps and wholesalers selling to food and non-food in a grocery store. In the gift and stationery industry, you have gift reps. So each channel of trade has a different group of reps for that channel of trade. It can be difficult. How do you find reps? How do you set up a rep network? Once you get into a given channel of trade and you look to see how many reps there are available, you're going to see there's hundreds of them. And how are you going to know who's any good? Because these people are salespeople, so they all say they're the best.
How are you going to find them once you get into a channel? How are you going to see a list of reps?
Oh, you can get a list of reps from trade magazines and look at the trade association, trade publications, and everything for each channel of trade, and you'll find plenty of sources for reps. The issue isn't finding them, the issue is picking them. Between trade associations and trade magazines, it's usually not very difficult to find. A lot of the reps even have websites, and you can find websites in a lot of industries that are designed to connect the manufacturers and the reps. So along that line, it's not that hard. But the problem is to find the right reps. And I have a couple of techniques that I've used that work pretty well for that. The first thing, if you look at the retailers in your channel, and look at some of the better ones, one thing you can try, which works sometimes and not sometimes, is to ask the buyer which of the reps that call on them do they think are the best. Now, technically, they're not supposed to tell you that, but sometimes you can find out. And there's nothing better than to be using the rep that the buyer likes the best. That's going to certainly help you get into that group of stores. And another thing you can do, most manufacturers' catalogs will have on the catalog itself who their reps are. They're thinking from the point of view of a store sees the catalog, they know who to contact to order. But it's great market research. You can see, okay, here's this company, and here are their 15 rep firms they use to cover the country, and here's their name and address right on the back of their catalog. So how easy is that? And the rep won't take your line if you're competitive with something you already have. But find some companies that are in your market that are established, dominant companies, and start with their catalog and try to use the same reps they do. A few things also about reps. When you come to the point where you're going to make an agreement with them, there are a few points I want to make sure everybody gets about agreements with reps. A rep will normally try to get more than they should. And I don't mean commission percent, I mean territory. They'll probably ask you for all channels of trade, for example. And I've never done that. I've set up reps for the grocery industry. I've had reps for the drug industry, reps for the gift and stationery industry, maybe also for the promotional products at specialty premium industry, a different rep for hardware. So each channel of trade can be a different rep. And don't let a rep tell you they handle every channel of trade, because nobody does. If you're doing a rep in the gift and stationery industry and they say they handle grocery, then you want to see what grocery accounts they have, because odds are they don't.
Why wouldn't you want to give them the whole thing?
Because if you want to get sales, you want to have reps who have relationships with the buyers of the stores you want to get in. And reps specialize by channel of trade. Gift reps specialize in the gift industry, grocery ones in grocery. So because each specializes in their own area, you can have as many as 10 different reps in the same geographical area, never bumping into each other because they're in different channels of trade. And then the other side of this thing is the geographical territory. There again, you want to take a look at what they actually cover. In the gift and stationery industry that I've had a lot of experience in, there are about 13 territories that cover the country. So if somebody wants more than one of those, odds are they probably don't do a very good job. That'll change by industry. Each industry has their own territories. But an agreement with a rep, aside from specifying the commission, which is obvious, it needs to specify, on the case of commissions, you should not have to pay commissions on returns or any return good or bad debts. You also don't want to pay commissions on sales outside the channel of trade. Most reps are going to want an exclusive on their territory, which means if you get an order from someone in that channel of trade in their territory, they still get a commission even though they didn't cause the sale. That's okay, because they're managing that for you. The biggest thing to have after all of this is you want to make sure that you have a clause in there that you can terminate them on 30-day notice for any reason. So if they're not performing, you can get rid of them. You don't want to have it be by cause, because then you can get into a fight about it. If you just put it in there that either party can terminate on 30-day notice, that's best.
When you set it up, do you give them a quota that they have to meet performance-wise?
You can do quotas, but it's probably not going to work very well if you're a new company. If you're a new company or a new product, a rep probably would not accept you if you try to put quotas on them. Another thing about reps, frequently reps don't sell anything, which seems to be a contradiction in terms. So these are sales reps. That's what they do. They're supposed to sell. Well, here's the reality of it. They don't. What they do is take orders, and I'll explain that from the point of view of the rep. Let's say the rep has a major account, 50 stores or something, and he has a relationship with that buyer, and that buyer is buying 15 of his different lines. You come along, you have a new product. Now, he doesn't want to go into that buyer and push your line because what if it doesn't sell? That will hurt his relationship with that buyer and could hurt his relationship with the other 15 companies he has in, that retailer. So the point of view of a rep is if the buyer asks, what's new? They'll show your product, here's what's new, but they won't have an opinion on if it's any good or not, so it's not their fault if it doesn't sell. This is not what you would envision a salesperson would be doing, but this is the real world. What happened with us in the sticker market is we did a lot of advertising and promotion and press releases to the retailers. So especially when we had sell-through information we could document, we had the retailers asking reps if they carried our products. And when that happens, if you have the 300 rep network we had, those 300 people can take an incredible amount of orders if all their customers are asking about your line. So what you've done is you've created pull-through from the retailer themselves asking the reps, so the sales happen then. The other way a rep will actually sell for you is if he puts your product in a half a dozen of his accounts because the accounts asked for it or because they showed him something new and he said, okay, I'll try it. And if the results are it sold really well for all six of those, he'll start mentioning it then because now his risk is less. He sees that it sells in his own accounts. He's seen that his own accounts have had good luck with it, so now he doesn't feel that it's a risky thing to mention your product up front to another one of his accounts. So what all that means is if you're a new product and new to the market and don't have any track record, what you want to do with any given rep is see if you can make sure you can get into a few accounts, even if you have to help them get in there, and then prove the sell-through so that that rep can see the sell-through, and then he'll be okay with bringing it up to other customers of his.
Okay. When can you not use a rep?
The main time you can't use a rep is the mass market. Walmart, Target, and the big mass market chains don't want to be talking to reps. There was lawsuits about this a number of years ago because there was a restraint of trade thing. But even though you can legally do it, the retailer realizes the rep gets paid a commission. They want the lowest price. They don't want to pay a commission to a rep. And so when you're dealing with a Walmart or Target, they want to talk to the principal of the company. You can make a decision about price right on the spot. And they don't want anyone in the middle taking a piece. They want you to be able to give them the best price. One other thing about how to get reps that worked really well for me, when we were in the gift and stationery market, like I said, 13 to 14 rep organizations covers the country, but that means in those organizations you have about 300 individual people who are carrying your line out in the field. When I first got in the market, I didn't know anything about it. I vaguely knew what a rep was, but I didn't have a clue. So I signed up a couple reps. I had one in Ohio and one somewhere else. But the guy in Ohio also had 5 Hallmark stores, and it turned out he'd started doing really well. And so when I found a rep who was doing well with my line, this particular individual who had 5 stores, over a period of time, I eventually got him to be my VP of sales. But at the beginning, what I did is I had an arrangement with him, like a lot of reps who'd been in the industry for 30 years. He knew everybody. There's always a small group of people, really, when you get down to it. So I set it up with him where he'd get a small override with the intent of him running that market for me. That channel of distribution. And he was able to get on the phone in a weekend and set up, just by calling his buds around the country, within 3 days we had a national rep network because he called up all his friends and got them to take our line. So pretty much overnight we had the best reps in all the territories. So that's a technique you can use. If you get one rep who's really excited about your line and doing well with it, you can have that person, for a small fee, organize and manage all the rest of the reps. I had that guy managing their other reps. I didn't do it. He did.
What did you pay him to manage that and handle all that?
Well, in the gift industry, a typical commission is 15 to 20%. So we paid our reps 20% because we wanted to have motivation for them to sell, and we give this guy an extra 2% override. So it wasn't a big deal. In the particular product line we had great margins, so the 20% commission to the reps and the 2% override was fine.
So what are some things you would recommend you do to support your reps and keep them happy?
This is a real critical point, because if one of your reps calls with a question and you don't get back to them, they're not going to present your line anymore. You've got to give them the support. And if you're in multiple distribution channels, which everybody's going to want to be, you need to have somebody who's in charge of rep communications in each market. And some of the markets and the way the reps operate can be so different. For example, in the promotional products industry, that whole industry is totally different than this gift stationery or retail store industry, that you need separate people. You need to be able to have in-house people who can answer any rep's question, get back to them immediately, if not answer them on the phone, and provide them with all of the sales support materials they need, like literature and samples and order forms. And it's critically important at the beginning of a new relationship that you have professional materials to give them and you can give them that follow-up, because almost every rep organization will have a lot of questions at the beginning. And if they can't get answers, they'll just forget about you.
All right, so what should I give my reps? What kind of tools are they going to need to represent my product?
You're going to have some variability by industry here, but in pretty much any industry, you're going to need to have literature with product photos, and if you're providing displays or merchandising aids, you want to show those, and you want to answer all the questions they'll have, such as, how does it ship? What does it weigh? What are the dimensions? And all of that. They have a thing called case cube, which is how many cubic inches is it, so they can allocate warehouse space for bigger chains. They all have set industry specifications. In the grocery market, it's really quite different, so you want to get samples of some of what other people are doing. But they have things called survey forms that have a vertical part on the side that tears off, which is sometimes how the stores order at an individual store level. So that's the basic product information. Then you need order forms, which tell about what all the choices are, the displays, the merchandisers, how many of each product, is it sold in assortments, is it sold separately. You want a three-part order form where the rep gets a copy, the retailer gets a copy, and you get a copy. That's the basics, the order form and your product sheet showing your pricing and all the specs of your product along with the pictures of it. I like to add to that any publicity releases or magazine or articles about the product, and I also like to add statistics and proven sell-through information, because retail buyers see products from everybody under the sun. You want to give them a reason to pick you over who they have now, and instead of just asking them to believe you, you need to provide them with facts. And if you can provide them with sell-through information, showing them how much profit per square foot per month they can make with your product, showing them how that's better than the average product in your category, now you're giving them a reason to give you a test. If you don't do that and you're just hoping that you can do it with your charm or your charisma, it may not work.
Would you say the 80-20 rule works along the lines of having reps? If you have 10 reps, two of them are going to produce 80% of the volume and eight are going to produce 20?
Definitely. I had one rep for the stickers that was in New England, which is a tiny territory, and usually there isn't much of anything there. But this particular guy called on a bunch of major chains that were out there, which is not typical for gift reps. But he got us in a bunch of chains, and that one guy accounted for maybe 25% of our sales out of 300 reps. He was far and above everybody else. So that does happen, but the 80-20 rule is definitely there. And the ones at the bottom of the barrel, you need to always be weeding them out and get rid of them and try to get somebody better.
How often should I be paying my reps their commissions? What standard, or is it different within different industries?
It's pretty typical everywhere. You pay them once a month, and you want to make sure you do promptly. Nothing can disenchant a rep more than not getting paid. You want to get them paid right away. Our policy with a new rep is we send them their first commission check like FedEx or something so they get it really quickly. On occasion, if somebody got a huge order, we might send them a check right then. Now, granted, this can mess up your accounting and bookkeeping and everything, but anything you can do to increase and incentivize the reps, the better. In another business I've had that was not selling to retail stores in the promotional products industry, there we paid commissions when we got the sales. If somebody sent us an order, if it was enough commission, we'd send them a check the next day, because that made a huge difference in their motivation. There's a limit to how much of that you can do. As you get bigger, it gets impractical to try to do that.
When selling independents, should I be using my reps for collecting overdue receivables, or should I keep that all in-house?
You should be using your reps, and it'll take care of itself if you set up your rep agreements properly. This is a real important thing. If you don't have past due accounts subtracted from their commissions, then they have no incentive to collect, and they have no incentive to not sell a bad account. So what we did is we said if an account gets 90 days past due, your commission is bye-bye even if we collect it later, because we've had to deal with late pay. Then you're going to make your reps do collections for you, which I think is a great idea because they're the ones whose commissions matter. Then what you want to make sure you do is you make sure you give them a report that lets them know who's late so they can do something about it in time to collect. So in summary for Section 14, there are a lot of things you can do to get reps, but it's important to use some of the techniques we talked about to get the best ones you can right up front and to structure those agreements properly. The next section, we're going to be talking about preparing for the sales call on a mass merchant buyer.
This is the end of Section 14. Please continue to Section 15.